News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, March 22, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, Canada is advocating lifting of a worldwide moratorium on field tests of genetic use restriction technology. Also, the GAO says more cooperation is needed on a state level to be on the watch for Asian soybean rust. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by to discuss the next generation of fuel from corn. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Be sure to join us this evening at the Tuscola Community Center for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. The meeting tonight gets underway at 6:30. Panelists for the meeting include Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities. That's at the Tuscola Community Center over on North Central Street. The meeting gets underway at 6:30, and we hope to see you there. Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this. May wheat in Kansas City, 417, unchanged on the day. May wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 349 and a quarter, down 3 1/4. July, 362, down 2 3/4. May corn, 222 and a half, down 1. July, 233 and a half, down 1. September, 242 and 3/4, down a half. December, 253 and 3/4, unchanged on the day. May beans, 577, up 1 3/4. July, 589 and 3/4, up 2 1/2. August, 594, up 2. November, 605 and a quarter, up 2 1/4. May soybean meal, 175.30, up 120. May soybean oil, 22.88, up 5. At the Merck, March feeders, 104.62 and a half, down 47 and a half. April live cattle, 82.97 and a half, down 50. April lean hogs, 57.20, down 105. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the markets is Paul Cooley of ADM Investment Services. He is in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I suppose a lot of traders were up in Chicago today doing other things other than flashing hand signs in the pits based on what I'm looking at in terms of volumes from the funds and generally the way the markets reacted today.
You know, yesterday we were very impressed with the option strategies and the very major market positions that this one option firm was basically very actively playing yesterday. We also saw a very firm to positive close and overnight trade as well. The office filled up with commodity customers from several different towns and visited our office this morning, and we were basically anticipating a fairly active trade. The markets opened, higher, and then we basically saw a lack of real leadership from either the corn options or the corn futures pit, and the market was basically void of very key market players. We did see an unusual situation, a very large exporter of soybeans was a major player, and the feeling was that it was taking a position or hedging inventory out of South America. So it was an unusual day in the fact that the market really needed some leadership from somewhere, and we didn't see much of that going on this March 22nd day.
Do you suppose this is the kind of trade that we'll have between now and planning intentions reports for the most part?
Well, you know, that's a good point. And, of course, there's still, million-dollar bets being placed on what those actual acreage will be, and also re-examining areas here in the U.S. That received moisture and didn't receive enough moisture. And, of course, they're always looking, looking at the most extended weather forecast for direction. My general impression is that for the first time we did start to get reports on the crop size on the Brazilian crop, and it might be a little smaller, but we understand at Rosario, Argentina, the truck line is 2,200 trucks, and no matter how long a line is in some of the major terminals in the Midwest, when you count 2,200 trucks of soybeans, that's a big gulp of beans, and, of course, that's in the export elevator at that very large export facility. So it's movement of beans, it's harvest of beans, and that did catch some attention and probably kept soybeans from putting in too big a rally.
And doesn't even count the beans that are probably still in the fields that were improved by showers in January and February, those late beans that still need to come out.
That's a good point. We understand that Mato Grosso, there is some rust concerns. In Paraguay, there might be some drought concerns. I talked to a senior economist at one of the major grain companies today, and he did that the farmer in Brazil is, for the second year in a row, is suffering from very low prices, lack of profitability, and a cost-price squeeze that's affecting all of agriculture all over the world. And you add in the volatility of prices, it's quite volatile. No matter if you're in Argentina or in Champaign, Illinois, there's been a tremendous amount of price volatility in the marketplace. But the general feeling is that the farmer is very tight holder of soybeans in both hemispheres as far as trading's concerned.
There's some sense that in the D's corn contract, Paul, we may have at least put in a short-term low at that 249 area. Are you in that camp?
Well, you know, we know that we're getting two questions in the corn market. Where do we sell again? And the answer is in that 260 to 265 area. But we did see a lot of people put a lot of money in their pocket from corn hedges at higher levels. The million-dollar question, of course, is whether $2.48 to $2.50 corn is cheap enough. And, of course, that would create quite a debate in trading circles. But we do know that the fundamentals in corn are different today than they were 60 days ago. In other words, it's a little tighter carryover, a little tighter supply-demand estimate. And we still have this growing season ahead of us. It maybe is a little kinder in the wheat growing areas, and maybe the La Nina weather forecast isn't quite as severe. Our general impression is that it's going to be a long summer. And, the other big beneficial factor is I guess I am overwhelmed at the continued demand for, ethanol energy here in the U.S. And, of course, down the road, that's one of the big items we're seeing. And, as in regard to selling those really deferred year from now corn contracts, is that it's always good, but you still have the dry conditions this summer, and those prices next year can also explode. So, there is risk out there. And one of my favorite things that I have on the board is the biggest risk is not under is the risk that we don't understand, and as a factor there is it's a when you go out a year from now, there is unbelievable risk at trading the market.
And certainly the elevators know this because they're really doing some interesting things already, trying to get some corn in the 2007 crop.
Well, that's true, and of course the interesting point is that that is a little more favorable as far as prices are concerned, and it does show the tremendous ability if a person does hold corn and has grain storage, he can hold that corn from now into May of next year for 40 cents a bushel more. So there is a tremendous amount of carry, and I think that's one reason why you're seeing so much grain storage being built in the U.S. today.
Before I let you go, we had the cold storage report at 2 o'clock. We see 64.76 million pounds for the pork bellies. I guess that number's probably been pretty well factored in.
You know, I'm going to pass on the pork bellies because that's one commodity that I don't watch. I used to watch that very closely, but I will share the idea that the cattle and hogs continue to just suffer in here, and it's the main factor here is we just have a big supply of good quality meats, and that is a big price deterrent here for cheap prices in the near term and cheap prices on the futures contract at the mercantile exchange.
Thank you, Paul.
Have a nice day.
Paul Cooley of ADM Investment Services. He is in Oakland, Illinois. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight. In north, central, and northeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows ranging from 17 to 28 degrees. Tomorrow, in the north, mostly cloudy with some light snow showers and flurries arriving. In central sections, increasing cloudiness with scattered flurries arriving late in the day. In the south, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Highs ranging from 37 in the north to 47 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, Canada is pushing at a major UN conference this week to lift an international moratorium on field testing of controversial suicide seeds. The seeds, officially known as genetic use restriction technology, are one of the most controversial products biotechnology has yet produced, and critics say they could undermine traditional small-scale farming. They are genetically modified to produce sterile offspring, meaning farmers have to buy new seed every spring instead of saving some from the previous year's crop. India and Brazil, both major agriculture countries, have banned the Terminator technology. Australia and New Zealand are backing calls to permit testing. The U.S. has not taken an official position on the technology. A new U.S. Government Accountability Office report says more state cooperation is needed in case Asian soybean rust becomes a major issue. The GAO report highlighted some inconsistencies in how states handled the rust issue, noting some states failed to report results weekly as required to do so. The GAO report also identified testing as an issue, noting inspections of sentinel plots in some states were based initially on visual inspection, while other states routinely took samples to laboratories for testing. The GAO report says such inconsistencies could undermine the value of predictive modeling. Iowa GOP Senator Chuck Grassley is in Brazil this week, where he's meeting with Brazilian lawmakers, researchers, agribusiness leaders, and government officials. Grassley is also getting a firsthand look at Brazil's efforts to upgrade its infrastructure. And Grassley says if the U.S. does not keep up, it could lose its competitive edge in the global ag export market.
We have been disagreeing with the president on the issue of the lock and dam infrastructure on the Mississippi, but I think that if, first of all, it's an old structures that are going to take a lot of money, even if they weren't expanded. But I think when you look at how Brazil exports things out of the Amazon without any of that infrastructure, although they don't have the roads and rail system we have, you could see that they're going to be very, very competitive with us. They're almost competitive now, and if they had good rail and road transportation, they would be.
But while Brazil is a fierce ag competitor with the U.S., Grassley says Brazil may be on America's side when it comes to the Doha round of World Trade Organization talks.
You know, a lot of times we might read about Brazil being a problem for the United States, but I think on market access, which is so important for American farmers in the World Trade Organization negotiations that are going on, that we have the same point of view or similar points of view with the government of Brazil. So on that point of market access, they're probably an ally.
Grassley's trip across Brazil continues through the remainder of the week. The Florida legislature is considering a measure that would ban food products from the state's schools if they contain high fructose corn syrup. Two Florida state lawmakers, one in the House and one in the Senate, say high fructose corn syrup leads to both childhood obesity and diabetes. Florida produces about half the nation's sugarcane crop, but only 0.2% of the nation's corn crop. The chairman of Archer Daniels Midland says the growing international renewable fuels industry is creating major shifts in the global grain and oil seed markets. Alan Andreas says global ethanol and biodiesel production is on the rise. Andreas noted how a glut of dried distillers grain is competing with soybean meal and how half the rapeseed oil crushed in Europe is going to biodiesel, requiring importation of palm oil to satisfy food demand. And U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns announced Tuesday that ag producers in Oklahoma and Texas counties hit hard by wildfires can remove dry grass on and move cattle to Conservation Reserve Program acreage without facing charges for grazing value or the baled value of removed forage. Johanns says the move will help producers hurt by the wildfires, which have scorched over 1 million acres in Texas and Oklahoma. And Johanns says it will also help reduce the risk of more wildfires breaking out. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
The next generation of fuel from corn is in the works. Todd Gleason has more on round two for the agricultural feedstock.
Renewable fuels in the United States start in the cornfield. Farmers across the nation have been working since the early 70s to gain acceptance for fuel made from corn, ethanol. In those years, Congress passed a tax break for ethanol producers. It's also about the same time researchers at the University of Illinois really started working on the next generation of fuel to be produced from corn, butanol, says scientist Hans Blaschek.
Right. It has great potential for use as a liquid biofuel as well. It's a little bit pricey right now, but the addition of those two extra carbons over what ethanol has actually gives it performance characteristics that are superior to ethanol in terms of energy content, you know, the octane rating, for example, in terms of the solubility characteristics of the material. And so that makes it much more sort of potentially usable as a liquid fuel.
Well, that's because it has a higher octane rating and, unlike ethanol, doesn't absorb water readily. It means butanol can be stored in a tank and even put into a pipeline. This is not to say that ethanol as it is produced today would no longer exist. Butanol would be an additional byproduct, probably along with many others.
If you think today of an ethanol dry mill as sort of the beginning platform, with ethanol as the platform chemical and starting chemical for the biorefinery, one can imagine, you know, that this will translate out into the future with lots of other potential chemicals being produced. And certainly, as we think about co-products, we have to start thinking about organisms other than just yeast that, for production of ethanol, but other organisms that have this ability to utilize 5-carbon sugars, which would be the types of sugars that would be coming off from, say, cellulose or co-product utilization.
And frankly, that's exactly what Hans Blaschek and his colleagues at the U of I have done. They've manipulated a bacterium to make better use of 5-carbon sugars, and it's economical. It could take the fiber left from the ethanol production process and make it into butanol, another renewable fuel from corn. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
And a good afternoon to you, Dave.
I would suspect that it's been very quiet in the last week or so.
Extremely. The phones are not ringing. The farmer has just kind of backed away from the market. He's not selling anything since this market backed off, getting ready to go to the field. And still a little consternation as far as selling cash beans, and a lot of them didn't sell when we got to $6. But other than that, it's been very quiet, Dave. Not much at all going on here.
Well, you look at May soybeans, and they're still $5.77, with, I guess, some significant potential downside depending on planting acres intentions report in a week or so. And if you hold them, maybe the basis gets sloppy. I don't know. Maybe this is the time to do something anyway.
Well, of course, you know, the farmer's favorite expression is, you know, I'm going to let them drop down 25 cents. Maybe then I'll sell them. I mean, that's just kind of what they're looking at right now. And, of course, you know, I read an article today where, you know, it may be tempered a little bit as far as all these additional bean acres are concerned since corn prices came up a little bit. But I think that they said the guys on the floor in Chicago are thinking, you know, maybe 750,000 to a million, where some were saying as much as three. So that report on the 31st could be very interesting, Dave. There's no doubt about it.
And we're getting new numbers out of South America with the Tour de Safras doing its thing, and numbers as low as 54, 55 million metric tons in Brazil. I don't know if I want to buy into that low a number just yet, but I suppose if the number were to come in along those numbers, you might get a little pop in beans, but certainly nothing like the prices we've been seeing.
No, I'm hearing the same thing. A lot are saying 53 to 56, and I think CONAB said 57. But another thing I read that's kind of interesting, though, Brazil was the biggest exporter of poultry in the world, I guess. At least I read this today. And with this bird flu, a lot of their processing plants have shut down, possibly more. So there's going to be a tubload, quote-unquote, of beans to be exported. So, you know, we may not be the prime supplier of beans in the April through October slot like we usually are. That's a little scary.
And then you take the fact that in the oil, in the bean oil, we're sitting on a bunch of it. And how does that affect crush?
Well, there's just not a lot of bullish aspects of this bean market. It's a sad situation, and there's a lot of them left in the country yet to sell. They did a pretty good job in contracting new crop, but there's still a lot of cash beans out there to be sold, and who knows where we'll go from here.
What about your prices today?
Cash corn today is $1.99, cash beans $5.52, and new crop wheat today is $3.22.
Kay, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. And in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Democratic Governor Rob Blagojevich and Republican State Treasurer Judy Bartopinka began trading barbs today and giving voters a preview of their campaigns for governor this fall. Blagojevich won the Democratic nomination, and Topinka edged out her opponents for the Republican nod in yesterday's primary. Champaign County Board candidate Bob Kirshner says GOP crossover votes cost him and running mate Lisa Bell a clear victory over the incumbents in the District 9 Democratic primary. County Board Chair Barb Wasacki and Vice Chair Steve Beckett have a narrow lead over their two challengers, but as many as 39 absentee and provisional ballots must still be counted, and they could change the outcome. Yesterday's vote by Southwest Champaign voters to create their own mass transit district will not affect the Champaign-Urbana MTD's day-to-day operations or future planning in that area. So says CUMTD Managing Director Tom Costello in a news release. Both sides now expect a judge will rule on which mass transit district will prevail in Southwest Champaign. A defense attorney questioned whether two witnesses who testified today in the murder trial of Maurice Legrone Jr. are qualified to assess people's response to tragedy. The two witnesses said Legrone and Amanda Hamm showed no emotion just hours after Hamm's three children drowned in Clinton Lake. Legrone is being tried for murder in connection with the deaths. Hamm is to be tried on the charges later. The judge at George Ryan's racketeering and fraud trial says the jurors are having unspecified trouble with their deliberations. Judge Rebecca Pallmeyer summoned attorneys to a meeting in her chambers today and told reporters afterward it concerned difficulties the jurors are having with deliberations. Details are under seal for the time being, but Pallmeyer says she expects to take more action on the public record later today. Hundreds of new jobs will be coming to Western Indiana as the pharmaceutical company Pfizer begins marketing the first inhalable version of insulin. The drug, called Exubera, will be produced at the Pfizer plant in Terre Haute. Pfizer will hire more than 450 new workers at the plant. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as I check these maps out, it looks like Brazil actually got some kind of significant rain on Tuesday. Maybe not in amounts, but in terms of coverage, a good part of Brazil got some.
That's right. We did see some scattered showers across Brazil. The rainfall intensity has lightened up greatly in northern parts of the country, which is really important. We've seen a lot of rain in the last couple of weeks across some of the northern production area, and it has set back some of the harvest progress in a couple of states like Goiás and Minas Gerais. But most of the nation continues to move along in its harvest rather swiftly. Very few problems out there. We are experiencing some heavier rains now in southern Brazil. Last week at this time, it was nearly 100 degrees and dry across that region, so they made some excellent progress in their harvest and crop maturation. But it does look like we're going to see several days now of rain in southern Brazil, and that will slow things down a bit. But as far as having a big negative impact on the overall harvest, it's probably not likely. We will see a resumption of favorable conditions in the south later on this weekend and on into next week.
What about Argentina?
Argentina has had some pretty fine weather as well. It was a little bit on the wet side earlier this month, but in the last week or so, we've seen a decrease in precipitation frequency. The exception was last night in Cordoba, which is the nation's biggest soybean-producing province, did pick up some 1 to 3 inch rains, which were far greater than what we were expecting. But that was pretty much a localized event in that particular province. The rest of the country has had some fine weather still today, and we don't see much rain coming on for the next week or so. That should support the crop maturation process as well as supporting some of the early season corn and sunseed harvesting, which is moving along relatively well there. So I'm not expecting a lot of problems in Argentina for a while.
Took a quick look at South Africa, and I was surprised by how wet it has been of late. Are they having some delays in harvesting?
Absolutely. March is normally the first month in their dry season. It shouldn't be raining much at all in the month of March, and instead we've been seeing about 3 weeks' worth of frequent rainfall, and that has certainly set back harvest progress. In fact, not only do we have that problem, but it started raining quite a bit in February, and temperatures were cooler than usual, so the crops there are not as mature as they should be. So on top of the harvest delays we've got, we also have a problem with crops not being fully mature yet. And so we need a period of prolonged dry and warm weather across the nation in order to get the crops back on track here. You know, before long, we'll be looking at frost and freeze potentials. And if some of these crops are not fully mature by then, of course, we're running a little bit of a risk of a quality loss there because of early season frost and freezes.
you talk frost and freezes. Let's go down to the Delta and ask you, how far south do you think those frost and freezes can go, and what's their potential for damage of corn, newly planted corn, and wheat?
Yes, I do think that we will see frost and freezes down almost all the way down to the Gulf Coast. I think we'll probably stop somewhere in central Louisiana and interior southern sections of Mississippi, interior southern Alabama, and same thing for Georgia. A lot of 30-degree, mid and upper 30s expected in those southernmost areas. It'll be cold enough for frost Friday and Saturday mornings, but I don't think we'll see a significant freeze in those particular areas. But the northern Delta, definitely we'll see some freezing conditions. The same thing's true for Virginia and the Carolinas, northern Georgia, northern Alabama. These areas will definitely experience some burn back of new vegetative development in the wheat crop. I think most of the wheat crop is not quite far enough along here where we'll lose production potential, but it's definitely going to be a shock to a lot of these crops. It hasn't frozen in some of these areas for quite a little while. Now, as far as newly emerged corn, most of that is confined to the Gulf Coast region, and I think our temperatures will be warm enough in that area that the worst thing that we can do is produce a little bit of frost and burn some of the leaf mass there, but we are not going to injure the growing point, and the crop will come back around fairly quickly. So I think corn's going to be okay, but the wheat crop may take a little bit bigger hit.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner, Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. And don't forget, you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather on our website. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.